I'm Cassandra Earle. You are listening to News and Views at RadioRegent.com, and this is your weekly news roundup. Beginning with international news, the World Health Organization said Wednesday that they were concerned about the increasing levels of COVID-19 cases in poor countries. Countries that are richer and have more stabilized economies have begun to reopen, but poor countries are starting to see increases in cases. The World Health Organization said that almost 106,000 new cases of the coronavirus had been recorded in 24 hours on Wednesday, which is the most single-day outbreak since the pandemic began. The organization's director general said during a press conference that this pandemic still has a long way to go, and the group is concerned about the rise in cases in these poorer countries. The organization has also been criticized by President Donald Trump, who says the organization mishandled the crisis, and he threatened to permanently withhold U.S. funding for the organization completely this week. The head of the organization emergencies program said that the world would soon reach a total of 5 million cases, a tragic milestone. Daily carbon emissions from around the world have been cut down due to the coronavirus pandemic. At the peak of the international shutdowns last month, the emissions were cut down by 17%. An international team of scientists calculated that emissions are starting to rise again as restrictions are being lifted. However, the emissions levels this year will be between 4% and 7% less than they were in 2019. This drop is the second biggest decrease in annual carbon emissions since the Second World War. It'll be 7% if the strictest lockdown rules around the world stay in place for the rest of the year, and closer to 4% if they're lifted sooner. For a week in April, the United States cut its carbon dioxide levels by one-third, China by almost a quarter in February, India by 26%, and Europe by 27%. The Canada-U.S. border will stay closed for another month as the two countries reach an agreement to keep travel to a minimum. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau made the announcement on Tuesday, and he cautioned that it could be months before non-essential travel is permitted. This extension means that the border will be closed to non-essential travel until June 21st. However, the agreement doesn't keep trade or commerce from commencing, as well as healthcare workers who live or work on opposite sides of the border. Tourists are still prohibited from visiting either side. Trudeau also said there was a clear plea from premiers to keep borders closed. Conservative leader Andrew Scheer said there should be more clear plans on when broad travel could begin or for how reopening the border would be managed. As of Tuesday, there's been almost 80,000 cases of COVID-19 in Canada, whereas America was facing 1.5 million active COVID-19 cases. In more local news, on Tuesday, Ontario officially began phase one of reopening the province. This step included reopening golf courses, all construction sites, retail stores with street entrances or curbside pickup, and vehicle dealerships. Specific health and medical services were also given the go-ahead to open back up, including in-person counseling and scheduled surgeries. Libraries open for pickup, tennis courts, research facilities, veterinary services, and nanny services also reopened. Ways businesses can accommodate these changes includes providing easy access to soap and water for customers to wash hands, using only fitting rooms with doors for easy disinfecting, and to stagger shift start times and breaks. However, shortly after Premier Doug Ford announced these plans last week, Ontario's Chief Medical Officer Dr. David Williams said he wasn't sure the province was ready for the first phase. Williams said although a downward trend of cases has begun, he would have liked to see this continue over 2 weeks before reopening. 700 people have officially died from the coronavirus in Toronto, the city said Wednesday. The city also urged people to wear masks where physical distancing might not be possible, such as city transportation, when buying groceries, or taking elevators. Toronto's medical officer of health said that wearing masks is not mandatory in the city, but encouraged it in these situations. Mayor John Tory echoed this statement, stating, quote, "Wear a face covering when in doubt," unquote. Toronto is also opening 850 park amenities as restrictions across the entire province are lifted. These parks include 14 skate parks, 4 disc golf locations, and more than 70 off-leash dog parks. Tory also said Wednesday that 150 basketball courts, more than 300 baseball diamonds, and more than 300 soccer fields should be open by the weekend. My name's Cassandra Earle, and you're listening to Radio Regent at RadioRegent.com.
Thanks, Cassandra. Now here's Nama Weingarten and Politics Talk.
What's up, Radio Regent? It's Nama Weingarten here for Politics Talk. It's been 2 months since this whole lockdown started, and by this point, I'm sure it's fair to say that we're all pretty sick of it. No one thought it would last this long, and some people are starting to question whether there's even a point in social distancing anymore. people have been voicing their opinions on social media, which is great on one hand because it can encourage some meaningful discussions. But on the other hand, it's causing the widespread of false information. And when it comes to a life-threatening virus, I'm sure we all want to get the facts straight. So today, I'm going to debunk one of the most popular claims against social distancing that I've seen on social media, or at least on Twitter. A lot of people have been comparing COVID-19 to the H1N1 pandemic, also known as the swine flu. Even Trump compared the two pandemics. When people first criticized his response to COVID-19, he questioned why people didn't care so much about the swine flu, but then created mass hysteria over COVID-19. You see, the swine flu pandemic started in the spring of 2009 and ended in the spring of 2010. During that time, the virus infected as many as 1.4 billion people across the globe and killed somewhere between 151,000 and 575,000 people. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Those are big numbers, potentially bigger than COVID-19, which so far infected almost 5 million people and killed over 320,000 across the globe. And what a lot of people are questioning is this. Why wasn't the world on lockdown during the swine flu pandemic? After all, COVID-19 infected 5 million people, while the swine flu infected over a billion. So why didn't the swine flu get the world on its knees? A lot of the theories that I've been seeing online had to do with how the media blew COVID-19 out of proportion, essentially forcing governments to shut down under pressure from health officials. A lot of people say that if the media didn't give COVID-19 this mass amount of attention, then we would all be living our normal lives right now. But let's get one thing straight. It's not because of the media that the world is on lockdown. It's because the two viruses are very different, and the way that we initially handled them was also very different. And although the numbers for the swine flu may seem way higher than they are for COVID-19, don't let that fool you, because experts believe that COVID-19 is far more dangerous. So, let's get some facts straight. The swine flu pandemic originated in Mexico in April of 2009 and then started to spread to the rest of the world. By June of that year, there were enough cases that the World Health Organization declared the swine flu outbreak as a pandemic. The CDC estimates that in the US, between April of 2009 and April of 2010, there were 60.8 million cases of the swine flu, with over 274,000 hospitalizations and about 12,500 deaths. So that means that the mortality rate for the swine flu was 0.02%. That is 5 times lower than the 0.1% average fatality rate for the seasonal flu. And the death rate for COVID-19 is much higher so far, but I can't give you an exact number because they really do vary so much from country to country. For example, as of late April, the death rates for COVID-19 in Italy was 13%, while in the US it was about 4.3% and only 2% in South Korea. We won't know the real death rates for COVID-19 until there is more widespread testing, because a lot of people just don't know that they had it. But back in April, the World Health Organization said that COVID-19 is 10 times deadlier than the swine flu. That could mean millions of additional deaths. And now that we know about the difference in death rates, let's go back and take a look at the numbers for each virus. So far, there are about 5 million cases of COVID-19 and about 320,000 deaths across the world. And as for the swine flu, there were 1.4 billion cases and somewhere between 151,000 and 575,000 deaths. I mean, the deaths for COVID-19 are already in swine flu territory, and we are nowhere near a billion cases. We're only at 5 million. And now, let me give you the exact same comparison, just in a smaller scale, so you can get an even better understanding. About 60.8 million people contracted the swine flu in the US from April of 2009 through April of 2010. And as we noted before, just over 12,000 people died. In contrast, so far, there are about 1.5 million COVID-19 cases in the US, but over 90,000 deaths. That's how much more deadly COVID-19 is than the swine flu. And that is why we need to stay home to stop it from spreading. But death rates aside, there are some other major important differences between the two viruses. One of them is the symptoms and when they start showing up. The symptoms of the swine flu are similar to those caused by other flu viruses. Fever, cough, headache, you know the bunch. And as for COVID-19, scientists are still trying to discover the full range of symptoms, since new ones seem to be unraveling every day. But so far, the main ones are fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath. When it comes to the swine flu, symptoms start showing up about 1 to 4 days after someone contracted the virus. However, COVID-19 symptoms can take anywhere from 4 days up to 2 weeks to show up when someone contracts the virus. And in some cases, the symptoms can be so mild that someone might never even know they were infected. And this is a key difference. The period of time between a person is infected and the time where symptoms start to show up, also known as the incubation period, can make it much harder to stop a virus from spreading. It's in this time period that an infected person wouldn't think that they should stay at home and avoid other people because they don't know that they're sick. It's in this time period that people continue on with their daily lives and perhaps even hop on an airplane to go to the other side of the world before they even know that they're carrying a deadly virus. The sooner we know someone is infected, the better. Just think of the amount of people someone can infect in 2 weeks versus 4 days. But COVID-19 and the swine flu also affect people very differently. The 2009 flu pandemic primarily affected children and young adults, and 80% of the deaths were in people younger than 65. But so far, COVID-19 is most deadly for people over 60 who have underlying health conditions. And finally, the last major difference is that the swine flu was simply less contagious than COVID-19. The basic reproduction number, also called the R-naught value, is the expected number of individuals who can catch a virus from a single infected person. And according to a review published in the journal BMC Infectious Diseases, for the 2009 swine flu, the mean R-naught value was 1.46. But for COVID-19, the R-naught value is estimated to be between 2 and 2.5 at the moment. But the thing is that it's not just the differences between the two viruses that made COVID-19 more destructive than the swine flu. It also has a lot to do with the way the world responded, especially the United States. You see, within 4 weeks of detecting the swine flu in 2009, the CDC started releasing health supplies from their stockpile, and most states in the U.S. had labs that were capable of diagnosing the virus without verification by a CDC test. But as for COVID-19, tests were a whole other story. Most labs in the U.S. received faulty kits at first, which caused a major delay in tracking the virus. Because of this, thousands of cases went undetected for weeks on end. And that leads to another crucial difference that we have to talk about, which is the availability of data. It's been 10 years since the swine flu pandemic, and so everything we know about it, like how contagious and deadly it is pretty accurate. After all, we had a full decade to research it. But COVID-19 is different. I mean, as of March 1st, there were 23 so-called confirmed COVID-19 cases in 5 major U.S. cities. But according to an analysis published in late April, there could have actually been around 28,000 cases in those cities by then. And by the time New York City confirmed its first case of COVID-19 on March 1st, there were possibly already 10,000 cases in the city. And remember when China also suddenly bumped up their death rates by 50% because they miscounted them at first? This should give you a good perspective on how little we know about COVID-19 so far. There's a reason the world wasn't on lockdown in 2009, and there is a reason why it is now in 2020. COVID-19 is a lot more dangerous and contagious, and there is just so much incomplete data about it. The number of cases is much higher than we know, and so are the deaths. So stop comparing COVID-19 to the swine flu and take social distancing seriously. After all, that is the only way life can get back to normal as soon as possible. Until that happens, or at least until next week, this is it for Politics Talk. For Radio Regent, I'm Nama Weingarten. Thank you so much for listening.